Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, I'll tell you, during the Vince McMahon era, I heard many people say Raw and SmackDown were lame shows, but it wasn't the wrestler's fault. The wrestling itself was fine. It was the storylines, it was the booking, it was the matchups themselves that led to it not being very interesting. And we had echoed those same sentiments many times here. And we said that under Triple H, he had started to realize that it is important to build storylines and to make sure matchups make sense and yes, use your undercard, but at the same time, perpetuate storylines so that it doesn't just feel like you're throwing matches out there to throw matches out there. Last week felt like they were throwing matches out there to just throw matches out there for maybe a good reason. And that reason was you're going into Saudi Arabia, you don't want anybody injured or tired or whatever. There was reasons why you might have put on a less competitive type show. This week, you have no excuse. You have no excuse. And I'm starting to get worried because this isn't looking good. It's not looking good at all. Now, I will fully appreciate the fact that many fans wrote me and said, what's wrong with the crowd? Crowd is terrible. Crowd's not reacting to anything. And it's true. You had a weak crowd. You really did. You had a weak crowd there. The building was full, but they weren't cheering for much. But I never blame the fans because they're already there, folks. All you have to do is give them something that they should be cheering for. I didn't see that much last night. I just didn't. Now, the Usos come out first. No Sami Zayn. You already knew that was going to be a problem because Sami Zayn's the most popular thing going on there. So you already knew that fans were going to be disappointed at that. The Usos started doing their talking about being the greatest tag team in the world, and out come the New Day. And their exchange is not bad, with the New Day saying, look, you were born into this. You were given all your opportunities because of who you were, not because of what you could achieve. And, okay, you did achieve a lot, but you were given those opportunities. We had to earn all those opportunities. And the Usos countering by saying, you had no pressure on you to be great. You could have ended up sucking, and nobody would have cared. If we ended up that way, it would have been an embarrassment to our family, to our bloodline, everything. So don't talk to us about pressure. Not a bad back and forth. Fans weren't buying into it because I don't think fans at this point think there is any possible way that the New Day is going to take those titles. But then out comes Matt Riddle, and I scratch my head. And I say, well, number one, you can't make it any more obvious. There's three Usos in the ring, and there's only two of the New Day, and here comes Matt Riddle. So, gee, I wonder if this is going to turn into a six-man tag team match. But instead of just having Riddle come out and say, hey, this looks like it's about to get physical and you guys look like you're one short. The way it's going to go down, I got your back. Which would have made more sense. He comes out with bongos and says, me and Elias are starting a band. And I was just wondering if you guys would like to get in on it. Like, you're really going to wait until Raw goes on the air and there's an exchange between two tag teams that are having a match before you decide to come out and talk about playing with bongos. And on top of that, the pot jokes are getting old. They're not funny anymore. Now they're just getting stale. You've beaten the dead horse, okay? So nobody buys this at all. And Riddle is coming off once more, just like we said, without Randy Orton, Riddle is coming off as an annoying character who you want to see get beat up. Cool guy that you think is, you know, funny and hip and you like. Randy Orton was the secret to that success. So, of course, they have a six-man tag team match. Now, the good news on this is the right person got the pin and the right person got pinned. You don't want either one of the New Day to be pinned since they're going to be on SmackDown fighting the champions. And you sure as hell don't need to have Jay or Jimmy pin Matt Riddle. It's irrelevant. So you did do the right thing having Solo pin Riddle. And it was a fine match. But the fans weren't into it. And the reason the fans aren't into it is it was so obviously set up that unless you're 5 years old, you couldn't possibly believe that these guys just decided on the spur of the moment to have a six-man tag team match to lead off Raw. You couldn't possibly imagine that. And that's why I think, Mike, a lot of the fans were just like, yeah, whatever. And again, I think Riddle's popularity is waning and his annoyance factor is going way up again.
Right. And to tell you the truth, it might, I don't know if and when Orton's coming back and what's going to happen with that. So it might very well be time to maybe flip Riddle. If he's going to be taking pins like that all the time, you know, it's probably time to start thinking about flipping him.
Well, I think something's going to have to happen because the way things are going now for Riddle, did you see the crowd reaction? Crowd reaction was, eh, so what? That crowd last night wanted a couple of things. They probably wanted a Roman Reigns appearance. We already know that's going to be, you know, few and far between, so they're not too disappointed on that. They probably wanted to see Sami Zayn. They probably wanted some continuation of this little feud between Jey Uso and Sami Zayn. Yeah, none of that. Instead, they got the New Day, who I must say are starting to look like they've grown tired of the gimmick. They need Big E back because without him, they're starting to feel old and not funny. And the camaraderie isn't like it was. It's just not. And right now, we're not taking them seriously. We're like, okay, they're going to, you know, go for the belts. They're not going to win it. Going to be some interference or something. So it's not really that big of a deal. During the course of Raw, people were writing me saying, what's wrong with the crowd? What's wrong with the crowd? What's wrong with the crowd? Well, I don't think there's that much wrong with the crowd. It's just they have nothing to really root for. What was it that they were rooting for? You had Seth Rollins come out. Now, he's the most popular guy there last night. No doubt about it. If the crowd got up for anything, they got up for Rollins. And he's going to have an open challenge. Fans are sort of looking forward to that, and out come Judgment Day. And that would seem like that's pretty good, especially when Finn Balor says, look, you cost me a championship once. Now I'm about to cost you one. Now fans are sitting there thinking to themselves, we're going to see pretty much a complete Seth Rollins face turn. That's number one. Number two, we're going to see quite a match in Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins. So, okay, they're all warmed up in their seat for that, and out come the OC. This is the second time that faces have come out to throw a wet blanket over what the fans actually wanted to see. So now the OC come out, and they start jaw-jacking, and Seth Rollins just slips away. and fans are cheated out of that match. And we get back to the jawjacking about how the OC is not what they used to be and blah, 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 and you're not over and this, that, and the other thing. And it leads to a full-blown attack in which, of course, Rhea Ripley is then attacked by the female member of the OC, which turns out to be Mia Yim. Now, if you could have possibly set this up worse for Mia Yim, I would love to know how. I'd love to know how. You put a hood over her and clearly showed her walking around. It wasn't during a real match. It had just robbed the fans of a match they wanted to see. So there was no pop when Mia Yim was revealed and she beat the hell out of Rhea Ripley. You have set up this Rhea Ripley thing where fans have been anticipating someone to come in there and beat the snot out of her, and you decided to do it in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania last night, and this is the setup you had for it? Let's do it after we cheat the fans out of Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor, and let's just unceremoniously walk her out there, and she'll just do it during a beatdown. No match, no nothing. That's not the way to have done this. Forget the Seth Rollins open challenge that isn't happening. You already know what's going to happen later on, so why did you do this? Just have the OC come out and say, we want another chance. And this time when Rhea Ripley gets in the ring and it looks like she's going to cost them the match, that's when you have Mia Yim come out and take her down. OC wins their match, and they introduce Mia Yim, and then you'd get a pop. You're not getting a pop this way because you just cheated the fans out of Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins. And this isn't even an authorized match, and Rhea Ripley didn't do anything. You have to have that anticipatory moment where Rhea Ripley's in the ring. She's saying, go ahead, hit me, hit me. You know they're not going to. And the other guys are sneaking up behind the OC, and all of a sudden, boom, here comes Mia Yim, and she takes her down. Then you get the pop. You worked so hard for this pop. You set up Rhea Ripley so much so that whoever was going to take her out should get a pop. And then you robbed the person you chose to do it of the pop by having them totally screw it up in how they presented it, Mike. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah, you're right. Okay. They robbed them. They robbed us of that. The brawl was okay, and they robbed us, but they robbed us of the match that we probably wanted to see. I mean, obviously they weren't going to give us that match anyway, but that would have been a hell of a match. You know, that would have
been. Well, that's my point. Then why keep that match?
Right, right, and you could have had them give you that match, and then as that match goes along, you know, people are going to say, well, the OC's coming out at some point during this match and going to cost Finn Balor the match anyway, right? You know?
There's a million ways you could have set this up. So Mia Yim's takedown of Rhea Ripley was a big event. Something that the fans were like, yes, finally, right? Because that's what you built it up to be. And you took the worst possible way you could do. You could hear a pin drop. Rhea Ripley selling the hell out of it, and the fans are like, yeah. Okay, there's a girl here now, and she's beating up Rhea Ripley. No, no, no. You got to wait for the fans to be angry. You got to wait for the fans to be electric about, damn it, Rhea Ripley's going to do it again. Damn it, we're going to get ripped off by Rhea Ripley again, and all of a sudden, here comes someone. That's how you get the pop. You don't get the pop this way. As you clearly heard, you don't get the pop this way. Todd, I don't understand this. They built this up for a long time and then took the worst possible direction to introduce the person who's going to offset Rhea Ripley.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, My suggestion of that, I would have Beth Phoenix make a return to go after Rhea Ripley or Charlotte Flair, one of those two. But me a Yim.
Even if you want it to be Mia Yim, it's okay with me. But then give her the opportunity to do a run-in that's going to be electric, that's going to get the crowd on their feet. You know? Do that moment. Have something spectacular. Have that moment where Finn Balor says, you want another match with us? Fine. But AJ, if you lose this match, you join the Judgment Day. No questions asked. You join Judgment Day. The OC maybe try to talk him out of it for a minute and have AJ say, fine, that's fine, because we're not losing this match. And then when it looks like Rhea Ripley is, in fact, going to cost them that match, Mia Yim comes out of nowhere, jump over the barricade, spears Rhea Ripley, while whoever is looking in disbelief at who the hell just took Rhea Ripley out, AJ Styles hits the Styles Clash, 1, 2, 3, that's it, and they reveal it's Mia Yim. And there's a big pop. There's no pop for this because of the way you set it up. And that worries me because that's Wrestling 101 and you should know that. Absolutely 100% should know that. We then get JBL in the ring. Once again doing his everybody's a snowflake routine and I'm a wrestling god routine. I like his stuff. I don't know. I don't know if this thing's working as good as they'd hoped. Baron Corbin is introduced. He's going to go against Cedric Alexander. Now, I'm glad to see Cedric Alexander back. I'm glad to see they're using some people. And this, if anything, is the right way to go. You use Baron Corbin in a way that he's not beating top guys right now. He's beating the undercard, but the undercard's being used, at least. So Cedric Alexander has a fairly competitive match against him. There's nothing wrong with this match. There's nothing wrong with his build-up, even. What might be wrong is that Baron Corbin looks as much like he belongs with JBL as Finn Balor looks like he belongs with the Judgment Day. It's just not working. There's nothing about Baron Corbin that screams, I'm a JBL type guy. Nothing. Nothing at all. And even JBL knows it, and that's why he's basing it all on basically size. Well, this is like a throwback to my day when you had to be big and you had to be really tough and you couldn't be a snowflake, and that's what Baron Corbin is. Okay, but there's no connection. There's just no connection. If you brought in some big, tough, Texas cowboy-looking dude, I'd say, oh, well, okay, there's a connection. There is no connection. And for that reason, they just look like the odd couple, and I don't know if this is working. I'm glad to see Baron Corbin winning some matches. You know, he's been pretty faithful employee, so to speak, of the WWE. He's done a lot of shit stuff. So it's good to see him actually getting some stuff where he's winning and he looks like they're going to be pushing him a bit. But, Mike, I don't know if this is working because I don't see JBL as good as he is on the mic. I don't see JBL's connection at all with Baron Corbin, and there doesn't seem to be much chemistry.
I don't see it either, but here's the deal. You see, this is the exact way we want to see them use Cedric Alexander, because – Here's my thinking on that. You keep having him wrestling good matches, but then also, but you know, not coming out on the winning end. And there's basically do the same thing with his ex-tech and partner. You know, then
yeah.
as they're going along, you know, you have Bobby Lashley come up and we got together before we won and all that stuff. So this could lead them using Cedric Alexander this way could lead to what we said should happen in the first place, and then putting back together the Hurt Business.
I mean, I hope it does. But even if it doesn't, at least you're using Cedric Alexander in a positive way. You're saying, look, he's a strong undercard guy. He's going to give you a fight. He's not going to win that many matches, but he's going to give you a good fight. He's going to give you a good match, and, you know, that's fine. I don't have any trouble with that. My trouble in this whole situation is I don't see JBL's connection to Baron Corbin, and they just don't seem like there's no chemistry or anything there. It just seems like it was thrown together last minute, Todd, and as good as JBL is on the mic, it's like he's getting all the heat for himself. Okay, JBL's on the mic getting heat. Corbin's not.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I don't think they will, with Baron Corbin, what he's doing, I don't think it fits him. To me, I would have him bring back the Lone Wolf gimmick. I think that gimmick was a better gimmick for him. And I don't think he didn't really need a mouthpiece.
No, I agree. And look, the best mouthpieces down through history haven't been the guys you really want to see get beat up instead of their wrestler. Bobby Heenan was a great mouthpiece, and it was fun to see him get knocked down once in a while, but he wasn't the guy you really wanted to see beat up. It was his men. Same with Jimmy Hart. Same with all of the managers, really. Now you're going to have JBL out here, and you're like, well, it's really JBL I want to see get beat up, not so much Corbin. That's not good. JBL has to transfer the heat to the person he's managing, not himself. He's only getting heat for himself. That heat is not transferring to Corbin. So for that reason, I'm not sure if this is going to work. Well, we'll wait and see. We then have Otis against Elias. And boy, oh boy, was Elias's push faster than the speed of lightning. No sooner has the word Ezekiel left your lips and Elias is back than Elias is doing jobs. Now, I like Otis. And I've said a million times, you should be promoting Otis. He's got charisma. The fans like him. Did you see the sign that said, we're here for Otis? Everything is working well for Otis. I have no problem with you having Otis go on a winning streak. But you just brought Elias back. And he's already lost a match. Now, I don't know if you're going to try to get together some wacky-ass tag team with Elias and Matt Riddle. I hope not. But, man, has the Elias push come and went, Mike. I mean, I was stunned. You know, I was like, well, this sucks for Otis. But then again, you know, he loses all the time, so I'm not shocked. And then all of a sudden, Otis wins. I'm like, well, what the hell? You've just brought Elias back. And he's already counting the ring lights. That's just unbelievable to me.
It is unbelievable, and that's the thing. I mean, like you said, I'm not against Otis getting a push, but not this way. You know?
Right. Yeah. And Mike, how many times have we said the WWE, and we have blamed Vince McMahon? The WWE gives you what you want, but in the way you don't want it. And here's another thing. Okay, so Otis wins. Oh, well, we heard you. We know you like Otis. We're going to give him a win. Yeah, but we don't want him over Elias, who just came in.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? I don't know. I mean, this was bad booking. Really, really bad booking. Elias is now basically irrelevant. And by the way, hasn't done one single solitary song since he came back. And that's his whole gimmick. His whole gimmick. You haven't let him do it. So congratulations. You really dropped the ball already with Elias. Austin Theory then takes on Shelton Benjamin. Glad to see Shelton Benjamin. I'm glad they're featuring them. And Mike is right about one thing, putting Cedric and Shelton on the same show. And having them not really be successful, but at the same time, doing pretty well, indicates to me they may be thinking about putting them back together. I hope so. Austin Theory needs a win. We didn't know how badly he'd need this win, but Austin Theory needs a win. He gets the win. Nothing wrong with this match. Once again, you know, but if you're a fan sitting in that audience and you paid X amount of dollars for these tickets and you're saying, okay, well, we saw a pretty good opening match and then we saw basically a squash match and then another kind of a squash match and now this is a squash match, you're saying to yourself, where's the top matches? Where's the highly contested matches? Where's the ones that's going to be a barn burner? Well, you ain't got any so far. You got the opening match. That was about it. So Theory versus Benjamin, yeah, better than expected, but there's not one fan who thought Shelton Benjamin was winning. I wouldn't call it exactly a squash match, but let's just say it was a match that had no excitement or anticipation around it because you very clearly understood that this is Austin Theory just getting a win, a badly needed win, just like Baron Corbin was going to get his win with Cedric Alexander. And you just came off Otis and Elias, which was pretty short and not a great match. So, Todd, you know, nothing wrong with this match. It's just that by now, if you're a fan, you're like, okay, I hope I'm going to see something a little more contested than this.
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said, with this the Shelton Benjamin and, Austin Theory match last night. It was not a squash match. It was like they gave Shelton a plenty of offense in his match. And like you said about Cedric too, in his match early in the evening, they both had good matches against their opponents last night.
Yeah, they had good matches. It's just that if I'm sitting in that audience, Mike, I'm saying, okay, this match isn't important in any way. It's not developing a storyline. It's not anything major. It's these are minor matches. These are almost inconsequential matches. And I've just got three in a row. And I'm hoping for something better because you've already pulled Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor out from under me. And now you're giving me very inconsequential matches. That's where the problem is.
That is where the problem is. And again, they were in Pennsylvania, they're back home, right? Why, first off, if you're back home, where was Sami Zayn? You know, I mean,
I don't
obviously
know.
He can be there. He can be there. He doesn't have to be worried about, you know, not going someplace. So where was he? First off, I know you want to get Solo in there, you know, which they did, which is a smart move, but Solo is a part of the story, but Sami Zayn is a bigger part of the story right now. People want to see Sami Zayn.
Yeah, I don't know whether he was sick or missed a flight. I don't know. I don't know what it was. But again, exactly my point. If you're going to say, well, we're not having Roman here, and he wasn't booked to be here, so fans aren't that upset. We're not going to have Sammy here. We're going to tease that we're giving him Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins, but we're not going to give it to him. Instead, we're going to give them Mia Yim, who most, I say 65% of that audience has no idea who she is. Then we're going to give you a couple of matches that really have no storyline involved or anything other than Baron Corbin's just going to beat Shelton Benjamin, who you haven't seen in months, and Austin Theory is going to beat Cedric Alexander, who you haven't seen in months. Fans in attendance are saying, is this the best you're going to give us tonight? Because, like, we spent a lot of money on these tickets, and we were hoping for some top-level, you know, matches that matter, and right now I don't see any. Now, we got the damage control thing with Alexa Bliss and Asuka and Bianca, and that was funny only because of Asuka being so animated in her screaming at Io Sky. The translation roughly was, you can't beat us with your own talent. And then Io Sky basically got in there and said something in Japanese. And Asuka said, oh, you speak Japanese. I'm surprised. And she said, why would you be surprised? And she said, because you're stupid. You're stupid, 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 stupid. That's what she repeated. And then Io Sky called her a bitch. They're obviously setting up this feud, which is fine. which is fine. But you've done nothing to further any storyline about Bayley or what the hell's going on one way or the other. She's lost twice. You kind of teased maybe Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair when Bianca Belair walked by her, but that's, again, if you've just introduced Mia Yim, that's who you want Rhea Ripley concentrating on. Oh, they brought her in? Well, I'll prove I'm better than her. You don't want to sidetrack it with, oh, no, who cares if Mia Yim's here? I want a shot at the gold. If you were going to do that, don't bring Mia Yim in yet. Just wait. Because now you've got a distracted storyline, and I don't like that. Speaking of distracted storylines, well, let's see what everybody thinks of this. Mike, I thought it was pretty funny, the exchange between Asuka and Io Sky.
Right. I thought it was pretty funny, too, since they're both Japanese and all that stuff. They don't speak the language well. I mean, Asuka is Asuka. She's just so bubbly and ebullient and all that stuff that you can't help but like her. You know, she's got the personality. We've already said that, right? So, And this obviously they're setting up the feud that we said they should be setting up for a while, right? Between Asuka and Io Sky. Now, what I would do then is I would have, when they take the mic, I would have them. AEW or whatever, have their Japanese wrestlers or their Mexican wrestlers speaking Spanish, Penta and the rest of them, and they translate it on the bottom of the screen. Now, it doesn't help people in the arena, but it does. I mean, you can put it up on the Titantron, and as they're doing their thing in Japanese, put the translation on Titantron, and there you go. I mean, do their
But you know what's funny, Mike? This audience. Here's what's funny: Mia Yim attacks Rhea Ripley, which is a big. When is this ever going to happen? That's what fans were talking about. When will somebody stand up to Rhea Ripley? It happened. We almost got Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor, and we got a confrontation between them. We got a confrontation between the New Day and the Usos, and it didn't get as loud a pop as two women screaming in a language nobody understood.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. And you could see when they were doing their thing, you could see Bayley and the rest of them standing around just trying to keep a straight face, you know?
Right. And the crowd reacted because there was, like, real emotion. They didn't know what the hell they were saying, but they knew that whatever they were saying it. You know what I mean? That got a bigger pop than some things in the night that should have got away, bigger pop. So there you go. I mean, you know, it's all in the way you set it up. I guess that's what I'm saying. Speaking of setting things up poorly, Johnny Gargano comes out. If he's not the most unlikable character that the WWE has had in recent memory, I don't know who is. He looks like a smarmy little tattletale running around stalking people, hiring private investigators to wear videotape, a video camera so he can tape someone. This is a face? He looks like a little ratty, I'm going to tell the teacher type guy. I swear to God, if you think this guy is getting over with this character, you've lost your fucking mind. It's awful. Absolute disgrace to Johnny Gargano, who deserves way better than this crap. Because this is true 100% crap. Now, there was a tiny little portion of me last night that said, we nailed it. The Miz is going, Dexter Lumis is going to show up, but he's going to attack Johnny Gargano. And the Miz is going to say, you had it almost right, Johnny. Not completely right. I never stopped paying him. That would have been cool. So I'm waiting for that. I'm saying, this is it. They're going to do it. No, they do not do it. Instead, Johnny Gargano takes another loss. He's irrelevant at this point. Johnny Gargano is irrelevant. All the people said, can't wait for Gargano to be on the main roster. Triple H will treat him right. He'll be this. He'll be that. He's a preliminary guy. Okay, he's lost to Otis. You're all saying, oh, Elias lost to Otis. Boo-hoo, Elias is finished. So did Johnny Gargano. And now Johnny Gargano's lost to The Miz. I don't care how he lost to him. It's irrelevant. He lost to him. By the way, one of The Miz's better matches, Gargano's good in the ring, and he's good at helping people to look better in the ring. But his character is horrible. And right behind him in horrible characters is Dexter Lumis. You're not getting these guys over. I don't care what the hell they do. Even The Miz can't save this. And believe me when I tell you, he's trying hard. Now, the only saving grace in this is that I start to smell a rat. And I'll tell you why I'm smelling a rat. Because anybody would know that Johnny Gargano's character is unlikable. And anybody would know that Dexter Lumis' character, the way he's being portrayed now, is unlikable. And when Johnny Gargano was playing that videotape, he fast-forwarded this a couple of times. So you couldn't hear what actually was being said. And I'm saying, well, that's very funny. Something's being said there he doesn't want you to hear. Quite obviously, or he'd play the whole thing, right? So something's up. My only hope is that they turn heel. And maybe in the process, turn The Miz face. That's the only thing I can hope for. Because at this stage of the game, Todd, Johnny Gargano and Dexter Lumis are absolutely no face.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about The Miz, I feel bad for the people in this angle, especially The Miz. I feel bad for. And like you said, I think this angle from the get-go is crap. That's what I think about that.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's absolute crap. I mean, I've seen some bad storytelling. This has got to be the worst I've ever seen, really. It's got to be one of the worst I've ever seen. Because if your goal was, we want to bring Dexter Lumis in and make him a cool, kind of dark, sinister, but in a way cool character, you failed. If you wanted to bring Johnny Gargano in as a smart, savvy, great wrestler who can outsmart The Miz and out-trick The Miz, you failed miserably because he looks like a little rat. That's what he looks like. And I think most people are just like, well, I feel bad for The Miz. So I hope that there's a plan. I hope there's a plan. Because if there isn't, and this is it, this is shit on a stick. Period, end of conversation. Absolute garbage. And not a soul in that arena gives one damn about it. And once again, here's Johnny Gargano up here. And what's he doing? He's counting the ring lights to The Miz. He's counting the ring lights to Otis. He's nothing special. We then get Nikki Cross versus Dana Brooke for the 24/7 championship. And poor Dana Brooke, who's like, you know, that's her only claim to fame, and she loses. And then immediately after, Nikki Cross attempts to throw the 24/7 belt in the trash, but she misses. So it just lands on the floor. You had one job. Throw it in the trash can. Well, where do we go from here? I guess the 24/7 belt is done. It's finished. I hope that's it. But I thought there was just a little bit of me that thought maybe they will make this a secondary women's title of some kind, and they'll actually defend it, as opposed to just running around like a bunch of crazy people through the arenas. Maybe they're actually going to make this something. Well, obviously not. I think it's been retired. I think it's done. We'll see. I mean, they could still do something with it, but it doesn't appear like that's what's going to happen. But that was pretty disappointing. Now here comes the real disappointing. Seth Rollins has his challenge. And he says, I wouldn't let you people down. I'm still going to do the open challenge. Why is Finn Balor not coming out? He wasn't beaten so severely he couldn't come back out. He already said he wanted the challenge. Why in the blue hell has Finn Balor decided, now I'm not going to take the challenge? Explain that one to me. But he doesn't. Instead, Bobby Lashley appears on the screen and says, I'm coming out there and X, Y, and Z. And what does Bobby Lashley do? After just making him look like a complete moron in Saudi Arabia, because I didn't know you were counting my shoulders down. I thought you must be counting the guy on top of me shoulders down. He then beats the hell out of Seth Rollins before the match starts, basically calling off the entire thing. Yeah, that's smart. That's a real cerebral worker. Oh, I beat him up so bad you're not going to allow me to continue the match and I don't win? Oh, my God, was that bad. But as bad as all that was, they're saying you can't wrestle because Seth Rollins is too injured to continue. However, Austin Theory can wrestle him if he cashes in his money in the bank. That doesn't make any sense. And then worst of all, why would Austin Theory cash in his money in the bank? Seth Rollins just issued an open challenge. So why won't you keep your money in the bank, come down there, attempt to beat Seth Rollins, or at least attempt to hurt him bad enough so that you say, maybe I'll be disqualified or whatever, but guess what? When I'm disqualified, then I'll cash in my money in the bank, and I'll win. Why in the blue hell would you cash it in? Now, you could say, well, it's because, you know, he thought he was so hurt that it was a cakewalk. Yeah, but he had an opportunity. His gimmick is, I think I'm the best wrestler. So when an open challenge is issued, why the hell wouldn't you take it as opposed to possibly throwing away your money in the bank opportunity? Now, we had Mustafa Ali originally come on the screen before Bobby Lashley beat the hell out of him. Mustafa Ali is another guy who's about as likable as a crocodile. My assumption is we're going to have some kind of a four-way match with Ali, obviously Seth Rollins, Austin Theory, and Bobby Lashley. That would be my thought. But boy, does this make Bobby Lashley look stupid. Boy, does this make Austin Theory look stupid. I mean, you can't do a worse job than this. The booking on this was one of the worst maybe I've ever seen. Todd, this was an absolute disaster.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was an absolute disaster in that match last night. With Bobby Lashley, what he did last night was sort of heelish.
Well, even if it's not heelish, it's just foolish. Okay, you want to take the open challenge. You have the guy hurt. How about you throw him in the ring so you can start the match? No, I'll just beat him up so bad that... they'll call it and say, I'm sorry, Seth Rollins cannot continue the match, so you have to go back to the dressing room. There will be no match tonight. Oh, Austin Theory wants a match? Fine, he can have one. Are you kidding? I mean, that's just terrible. Awful. It's just made a mockery out of the whole thing. You want to talk about bad storylines? My God in heaven. We all thought, oh, Triple H is going to issue out the old bad storylines. You think the Miz and Johnny Gargano storyline is good? You think this awful, terrible, ridiculous cash-in is good? You think introducing Mia Yim as the person who's going to take out Rhea Ripley in this fashion is good? These are all horrible mistakes. And mistakes you just don't make if you're good at this. You just don't make these mistakes. You just don't. What would have been wrong with Austin Theory coming down, saying, I am going to take this challenge? Losing, having Bobby Lashley come down and destroy Seth Rollins because he's just mad at Seth Rollins and saying, I'm next, I'm next, I'm next, beat the hell out of him, and then have Austin Theory be like, I'm cashing in. Bobby Lashley just did me a favor. I'm cashing in. And then lose. If that's what you want to do, at least it would make more sense than this. You can't say the man can't continue to wrestle, so therefore there is no match, and then say, except here's Austin Theory, so ring the bell. I don't care if he's got the Money in the Bank briefcase. Makes no sense. Just makes none. So unfortunately, this episode of Raw felt extraordinarily misbooked through the whole thing. I think the big, big buildup to who will take out Rhea Ripley was ruined. I think you've kind of sealed the coffin on Johnny Gargano. I think you've kind of sealed the coffin on any big return from Elias. It looks to me like Riddle is heading in the wrong direction fan-wise. Damage control ain't working. And having Nikki Cross sort of be with him and sort of not be with him, and you don't know what she's doing, that's not working. You've thrown the 24/7 belt in the garbage, so I don't know whether you're intending to just forget about it or try to rebrand it or something. Don't know. But none of this is working. Last night I watched a show where I said, I'm not interested in any of this. I mean, there was nothing there that I said, oh, man, now that's going to lead to something. Or, oh, wow, I can't wait to see that. It was all just, It felt like a second-rate house show. And then you want to say, well, the crowd was dead. Yeah, he didn't give him anything to be excited about. The loudest the crowd got is when Asuka and Io Sky is yelling at each other in Japanese and they didn't know what they said. So that goes to show you how bad the storylines were. When the crowd gets worked up over something they don't even understand above what you came up with, that's not good. It's not good. So unfortunately, this time around, I have got to give, I'm not going to give it a flat F because the matches themselves were solid enough. Cedric Alexander and Austin Theory put on a good match. I mean, Sheldon Benjamin and Austin Theory, Cedric Alexander and Baron Corbin put on a fine match. Johnny Gargano and The Miz put on a fine match. There's nothing wrong with the matches themselves. It's that nobody's really interested in where they're going. It's like saying there's nothing wrong with the acting in the movie, but the plot is terrible. So, yeah, the actors are fine, but I'm not interested in the movie. Well, that's sort of what's happened here on Raw. There's nothing wrong with the performers, but I'm not interested in the story. I don't want to see any more of The Miz and Dexter Lumis crapola. I'm not really interested anymore in this damage control thing with Asuka and Alexa Bliss and Bianca Belair. We've seen it to death now. Baron Corbin and JBL ain't working for him. So what am I supposed to take away from this? You gave me back Elias, and then you let him lose to a team that never wins. It all seems a bit, I don't know. I'm going to give it a D. I'm going to give it a flat D, Todd. What's your rating?
I got to give it a flat D as well. That's the same grade.
I was not excited about anything in the show. In fact, I was quite disappointed. It didn't really hold my attention. The matches themselves were solid enough, but the storylines are just, the Raw storylines are bad. What are the Raw storylines? What will happen with The Miz and Dexter Lumis? And what is this thing about him possibly hiring Dexter Lumis? Does anybody care? Didn't sound like it from that crowd response. What's the story with Damage Control? How will they now get on with Nikki Cross as a fourth member when we only have Alexa Bliss and Asuka and Bianca Belair? I don't care. I don't care. Quite obviously, someone's coming back. Probably Becky Lynch. But I don't. It doesn't matter. Damage Control is not interesting. How will the Judgment Day deal with Mia Yim? I don't care anymore. This feud has not been exciting. The only thing that's good about the Judgment Day right now is Rhea Ripley and Dominic. Get them the hell out of the Judgment Day. Get them by themselves. You may have something. But you don't have it this way. And there's just nothing to anticipate. They always say, you know, you want to leave the show with people saying, can't wait till next week. Next week for what? What happened this week that you're like, oh my gosh, can't wait to see what happens next week? Absolutely nothing. That's what. Absolutely bad show. Bad show all the way around. Unfortunately, we lost Mike, but we'll get his rating later. Anyway, folks, that's it. I mean, listen, I hope you enjoyed it better than I did. But I was let down by it. I thought they could have done a much better job, and I don't – when I'm starting to anticipate what the future storylines are and how they're going to carry them out, and I'm not seeing anything I'm interested in, it worries me. And that's what's happening right now, is I'm very worried that the storylines for the next month or two on Raw is nothing that I'm interested in. And judging by the crowd reaction last night, nothing at least the Wilkes-Barre crowd was interested in either. And that's got to be a bad sign. Hopefully they can right the ship next week, but this one was a bad one, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next Friday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.